Welcome to Aging in Arizona, a show dedicated to educating listeners about current healthcare topics and local services. Now, here are your hosts, Presley Reeder and Mark Young.
Hello and welcome to Aging in Arizona. We're so glad to have you with us today. As you know, we talk about the joys and some of the challenges of growing older here in our great state. And we also talk to local experts about what they see happening as people age. We also discuss the services that are available that you and your loved ones may not be aware of. I'm Presley Reeder. As always, I'm here with my co-host Mark Young, who we'll get to in a moment. But first, our guest is Roger Coventry. And Roger has been on the show before, and we are honored and privileged to have him back as an expert in what we're going to talk about today, trusts and trust administration. A lot of great information for you about that. We're also honored to have him back because he's just a very accomplished person and an expert in a lot of fields. Roger's a partner and director of estate services for Childers and Coventry, which is a private fiduciary firm in Maricopa County. We're going to talk about what a fiduciary does if you don't know. His bio is extensive, Mark. As you know, he was a collegiate wrestler like you.
All right.
He was at North Idaho College and also served in the military and was part of the survival. I love this part. Survival, evasion, resistance, and escape instructor course, which is part of the Army Special Ops units. And so just a really accomplished individual. We'll talk more about what you've done. I know Roger also deputy director for the Maricopa County Public Fiduciary. So a real history of leadership here and a real compassion for folks that are going through this challenge with the state administration, which is something that people find themselves in unprepared for and facing some things that I don't think they ever thought they would face. So
I think most of us don't think about it, and I that's why we keep bringing Roger back, because he's the one that kind of gets it through my head a little bit.
I know, and it just keeps digging. You know, we talk to him once, and you think, boy, there's these other questions. We got to talk more with him about this.
Absolutely. But before we get too far, we need to find, you know, how's Mom and Dad doing?
Thank you, Mark.
Do they have their trust in place? Have they met with Roger?
Interesting, right? They have their trust in place, but every time we're talking with Roger about these types of issues, I think, boy, I don't know if we've got all our I's dotted and our T's crossed. And we haven't had these deep, you know, conversations from a I's and T's conversation with Mom and Dad. So I'm always reminded, how do I do that? How do we talk about what should I be asking? And I think I'm very involved in the administration of their estate, but what that role is kind of interesting and unknown to me.
I think you find out, too, legislation changes it all the time, too. So I'm sure Roger will update us on that. But before we get in, we need to thank our sponsor, and that's Comfort Care Home Care. They're ones that make this show possible. Comfort Care provides the care you need in the best place of all, your home. Call Comfort Care at 602-438-1300 or visit their website at www.comforcare.com to find out more about how one of their caregivers can assist you and your loved one to continue to live safely and independently at home. Comfort Care is helping you live your best life possible.
Great. Thank you, Comfort Care. Thank you, Mark. And again, a thank you to Roger Coventry for being with us today. And I'll take the opportunity to thank you for your service to our country in the Army and also your children serving. So we always want to thank our veterans, and we appreciate the service that you and your family have provided, continue to provide, to keep us safe and sound here in the U.S. Let's hand it over to you. I think we covered your background, but tell us about administering a trust and really just a quick summary. What is a trust and why does it require administration?
Okay. Well, first I want to thank you gentlemen for all the kind words and inviting me back. What is a trust? A trust is an estate planning tool, and for most people, there's a number of ways that a trust can be used to not only help them dispose of their assets, but also it could go on for generations after the death of the trustors. So it's an estate planning tool. Unlike a will, it's typically not made public, so there's a privacy element to having a trust. The trust can be set up for various purposes: asset protection, tax planning, protection against creditors, potential creditors. So there's a lot of good reasons to have a trust. As you probably know, there has been some changes to the tax estate tax laws so that there's a much bigger deduction, personal deduction. So having a trust for the benefit of avoiding taxes is a lot less important than it used to be.
And that's the way that a lot of people, I think, have thought about it in the past, is that it's a tax planning tool. You can avoid sending Uncle Sam all your money after you pass on. But there's more to it than that, a lot more to it. And maybe what I hear you saying is that that's not even maybe at the top of the list. So what is at the top of the list? Your firm, Childers and Coventry, steps in and helps administer trusts. And so that obviously begs the question, why would people need your firm to do that? And what are some other ways that people have trusts administered?
Well, unfortunately, probably the number one reason we get involved in trust administration is the dysfunction of the beneficiaries or the family. Beneficiaries sometimes and often now come from mixed families, his and her kids. And after the trustors have passed, sometimes the relationship that was maybe held together by the parents goes south amongst the mixed family. Oftentimes, one of the children is named as the trustee, successor trustee, but because of the dynamics, it doesn't work out very well, leads to litigation or infighting, and we get appointed to hopefully clean up the mess and make things better.
Mm. So there's a mess there that you're going to step in and clean up. And I know we're going to talk about avoiding that mess and giving some suggestions for that. But I also, by avoiding that, it, I guess, takes business away from your firm, right? If people are able to do it in a healthy way on their own. And yet it sounds like there's so many times where they don't. There's certainly plenty of business out there for you. But I want to talk about both, because there can be an advantage to having a professional trust administration firm like yours step in and do it, even if there isn't dysfunction. So why don't we start with how to avoid it, and then let's talk about maybe the choice would be better to have you step in.
Sure, and that's one of the reasons I chose the topic for today is, you know, it's understood that in many cases, trust administration by a non-professional works out just fine. They don't need us. They don't need a professional fiduciary. But in cases where that's not going to work out, then we're here to serve. But I want to do this as a community service. I want to help people who can get through this, you know, through the trust administration, avoid the pitfalls. So kind of focusing on that. But if they can't, then explaining how we could step in and help. Hmm. So there are many ways to reduce the potential impact of, you know, kind of dysfunctional trust situation. And like I said, a lot of this comes from a mixed family situation. In some instances, a limited power of appointment that is drawn into a will or even the trust will allow a trustor to make some revisions to the plan. As time goes on, things change, and sometimes folks don't keep up with their trust by revising it or amending it. But the power of appointment can help make some adjustments that can be made. They see something that needs to be addressed, and they can do that in their trust. Having a third-party or non-beneficiary trustee named in the trust can be helpful. Sometimes a parent will choose a child and then have their alternate be another child. Well, once the dysfunction starts, having another child be the successor or alternate is probably not going to solve the problem. So having a neutral would probably
be a neutral third party, okay.
Correct. Having a split of the trust corpus, you know, the principal balance of the trust, having that split, which is very common, having that split upon the death of the first trustor, AB split, people have heard that term a lot. That's a good idea, but I've seen that go awry as well. And a lot of times it's because it's not split. A lot of times the surviving trustor has a bias against some of the ideas of the trust, you know, like splitting the trust. And they either won't do it because they choose not to do it, or they just neglect to do it. And then time goes on. It becomes the norm. And then later we inherit the mess and try to clean it up.
I'm sorry, and I'm not quite following you on this one. Are you talking about splitting a trust into multiple trusts? Are you talking about splitting the responsibilities of the trustees?
Oh, good question. Yeah. It's actually typically the split of the principal balance of the trust. So instead of having one trust, the Jones Family Trust, it becomes the Survivor's Trust and the Decedent's Trust, or sometimes people call it AB Trust.
There's split. Two different administrators for the different principals? No.
Not necessarily.
They might leave it as one.
That's another good point, though, that that could actually alleviate some issues as well. So planning this out and coming up with some viable solutions in advance is very helpful. And, you know, that's one of the things I want to offer at a later point in this conversation is how a professional fiduciary, someone who's actually administered trusts, can give advice like we're doing now to the community. But I also welcome people to call our office, and there's no charge. I'm happy to do it. I love all the questions that I get, and I can help explain from a practical perspective how you can avoid some of these problems, even in the drafting of the trust itself.
Yeah, I think that's a great offer. I'm going to have you give the phone number here in a moment because, Mark, as I'm thinking about the process I went through with an attorney to set up my trust, talking through it, certainly they were helpful in thinking through a lot of these things, but there was always this sense that I couldn't dot all my I's. I couldn't cross all my T's. There was really no way to anticipate in a document all of the things that could, as Roger just said, go awry as things changed after my death. And so having access to somebody who goes through it every day, deals with these things, who can say, boy, watch out for these major pitfalls, sounds really good. So what is the phone number? We'll give it now and we'll give it later.
Sure. Childers and Coventry can be reached at 602-283-3332.
One more time. We say it twice on the radio.
Good idea. 602-283-3332.
Perfect. Okay, and that's going to take us to break. Our first break, as we're talking with Roger Coventry from Childers and Coventry, a private fiduciary firm in Maricopa County that can help with trust administration. He's talking about avoiding the pitfalls that come with trust administration. Some really helpful tips and lots more to cover when we return. You're listening to Aging in Arizona on 960 The Patriot. Losing my head. Welcome back to Aging in Arizona. I am Presley Reeder here with my co-host, Mark Young. If you're just joining us today, we are privileged to have Roger Coventry with us from Childers and Coventry, which is a private fiduciary firm in Maricopa County. And Roger was also at one point the deputy director of the Maricopa County Public Fiduciary. So extensive experience in fiduciary responsibilities. Trust administration is what we're talking about today. And in our first segment, Roger was walking us through the pitfalls that you can avoid by thinking them through and setting up your trust the right way in advance so that you don't end up having to use a firm like Childers and Coventry because you've run into a bunch of landmines. So let's wrap that up here, Roger, talking about those pitfalls that you were mentioning earlier.
Okay, so I was going down kind of a laundry list of ideas that could help avoid the potential of litigation or the need to mediate issues. One of the things I don't see very often but I think is helpful is a clearly stated purpose. Why is this trust being set up to begin with? And the rationale, if there's any difference in the amount of distributions to be made so that later on people don't have to fight over what mom and dad were thinking. You know, why did they give one person more than another, for example? Or why did they set different parameters as far as when the distributions could be made? If there's some natural error that's not included or is excluded, why? And it wouldn't hurt to put that in there. It could be a a touchy subject, but you know, it's probably better if it's not in there, at least to have that discussion with the beneficiaries in advance, so it's not a surprise. A clear in terrorem or no contest clause, meaning any of the beneficiaries that contest a provision or the entire trust would be subject to being disinherited essentially from the benefit of the trust. That's a pretty good barrier.
Deterrent.
Yeah, deterrent.
Right. I would imagine that if somebody's thinking about contesting and they know if I contest, I could be disinherited completely, that would make them press pause.
Yes. And a third party, we discussed this earlier, a non-beneficiary trustee actually named in the trust as an alternate perhaps. And then one thing that a lot of folks have heard of, it used to be in vogue and is now kind of coming back, and the idea of a trust protector. That is a person, a third party, a neutral, not a beneficiary. Sometimes it's an attorney. Our firm acts in this regard too, where the trust protector is not paid. They don't have any ongoing regular duties other than to oversee the administration of the trust, and in most cases can remove the trustee for cause and replace the trustee. It really could help avoid litigation and they could even just basically mediate issues that come up in the trust.
Hmm. That's an interesting concept. We're going to talk, I know, about if you're in the other seat, you're in the trust, you're the trustee. And so I'm thinking about being in that role for my own parents, and you're administering the trust. You know, there's this trust protector overseeing you, almost like a board of governors for an organization or something along those lines. I hadn't heard of that before, so that's interesting. But before we get to that, Mark, you'd had a question, I know, during the break. I don't know if we covered it there or if you wanted to follow up on it.
Well, I think, you know, just the general concept. So, you know, you brought up your situation with your children, young kids. You're fairly young yourself. Most people your age probably don't have a trust. Most people, when you hear about an estate that has a trust, it's pretty large. So I'm kind of curious, what person should be looking at putting a trust in? And actually, how much assets and stuff do you really need to when you start thinking about developing a trust to cover it?
Well, I think the bigger question is, what assets are you willing to put at risk? Because if you're willing to risk your assets to creditors and have your estate plan become a public document essentially or open to the public, then you don't need a trust. But if you have assets that are worth protecting and businesses, you know, mixed properties in other states, for example, mm-hmm. having it in a trust will help not only protect you from creditors, but also just helps smooth the final administration, the wrap up and distribution of your estate. You know, having things in outside of trust and through a will or without a will, for example, is a lot more complicated in some cases, more expensive, open to the public scrutiny.
And that's because in a will, it is open to probate challenges,
correct.
Whereas in a trust, it is not.
Well,
am I correct on that?
Yes, yes.
Partially.
The courts are a little bit loath to, you know, start meddling in a trust. But if a party has good cause and approaches the court, you know, Superior Court of Arizona would have the jurisdiction over any kind of trust or probate litigation. You know, they'll take the case and they'll try to help mediate it for the parties, but and maybe mediate is the wrong term, but resolve. But in any case, they'd rather stay out of it if at all possible. But you know, when it's needed, they will oversee, you know, the issues and deal with them.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like with a trust, you're going to have a better communication channel for what you wish to be done with your assets.
A better voice
for your loved ones. But what you just outlined for us is that even if you have tried to set up that voice, you can still confuse a whole lot of people in that process. And particularly if you've got a mixed family, you've got a variety of different assets, and you haven't clearly communicated it, you can run into some real pitfalls. Trust, having the trust itself, Mark, you said, you know, I have a trust, doesn't guarantee a smooth process by any means. And you step in a lot of cases where it wasn't a smooth process.
And another point to make here is a trust can contain provisions that are specific to specific beneficiaries, and other beneficiaries don't have the right to see those provisions. Each trust beneficiary has the right to all the provisions that are pertinent to their interest in the trust. And a good example is when a parent or whoever the trustor is creates a provision specifically to address a problem. You know, someone may be, you know, one of their children may be an alcoholic or have drug problems or special needs. And there could be provisions in there that help address those issues, but they may not necessarily want that to become knowledge to all the other beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. So a will doesn't allow that kind of privacy or confidentiality.
Yeah, that lays it out for all the world to see. Now, we only have about a few seconds here before we're going to have to go to a break, but I want to at least introduce what we're going to talk about next, and that is the idea of being the trust administrator as an individual. If you are asked to administer a trust, what does that really mean for you? What are some of the questions you should ask? I've been asked myself to do that, and I've asked someone else to do that for me. And yet, in seeing and talking with you, I think I didn't ask the right questions when I was asked to do it, and they certainly didn't ask me the right questions when I asked them to do it. And we're going to talk about what your firm does when you get involved as well as a private, as a third party, really, administering that trust. So lots to talk about on the other seat of trust administration when we continue. We're talking with Roger Coventry from Childers and Coventry. Again, their phone number, there's a lot of questions here, so you can give them a call at 602-283-3332.
Correct.
602-283-3332.
You're listening to Aging in Arizona on 960 The Patriot. Come care us up and you live your best life possible.
When I get older, losing my head.
Welcome back to Aging in Arizona. Thank you so much for being with us today. Another great topic for you, and that is trust administration. Whether you are in the role of setting up a trust for your estate after you pass on, or you are being asked to be a trustee, we're covering both of those roles and responsibilities with Roger Coventry from Childers and Coventry, which is a private fiduciary firm in Maricopa County, and deals with this very issue. How do you administer trusts effectively to meet the wishes of the deceased and to serve the family in the best way possible? So, Mark, before we went to break, we were talking about how we're going to flip the script a little bit.
Well, I think you brought up a great point on your own personal situations. You've had the opportunity to ask somebody to be a trust administrator as well as be a trust administrator, but I'm going to look at Roger, the expert, and say, what is the role of being a trust administrator?
Well, it's quite varied. You know, in a nutshell, you are carrying out the estate plan of the trustors. And like I said earlier, it could be as little as just disposing of the assets within that very next generation, so to speak, or some trust can go on for a fairly, you know, lengthy period.
It's quite a role, though, and you summarize it there pretty briefly. This is the profession, right? You know, this is it. But boy, when we think about all the different elements of trying to administer somebody's trust, that's a big responsibility.
Yeah,
and it's a professional role that your firm has trained for, you've gone to school for, all the folks that you're, you know, fiduciaries are trained professionals to do this. But in most cases, it's just a family member or an individual. Talk about the differences in that. Let's kind of dig into what the role is and what how it plays out.
Sure. Well, you know, whether you're a professional or a family member trustee, you have the same responsibility and duties. I actually love trust administration because a well-written trust, I look at it as like a guide, a roadmap. Mm-hmm. How do we get from A to B? And I've seen trusts that are so well-written that anybody could do it, really. If you could read and understand the language, you can follow the instructions, you can do it. Unfortunately, for both the professional and family, what I call family member trustee, a lot of trusts aren't well-written or they've had amendments have been made so that it becomes confusing. There are sometimes conflicting provisions. But the role is the same. The duties are the same. The statutes, Arizona's got a great section in Title 14 that covers trust administration. So where a trust document may not have a provision for dealing with an issue, you can look to the statutes to help fill that in. So you don't necessarily have to go to court. You don't necessarily have to hire an attorney. But if something's unclear, you can call my office and ask for some assistance. We don't give legal advice, but we certainly give practical advice on trust administration. But the duties are the same. Family member fiduciaries may not understand what they're doing, but the duty is to carry out the estate plan of the trustor.
The duties are the same. The experience is different because you do it on a daily basis as a professional. They've probably never done it before. And in addition to the duties being the same, I imagine the landmines are the same. And you run into a lot of those. You see the challenges that come with it. What do trust administrators, family or professional, end up running into that are challenging?
Well, probably the number one is not on the top of my list, but competing interests. You'll have beneficiaries of a trust that may or may not want to have distributions made to them. They may have a much higher need for distributions than others. So depending on the language of the trust, you may be placed in a tough situation where you have to liquidate assets in order to satisfy the needs or wants of a beneficiary. And depending on your discretion, you may have to actually make a distribution. But also, depending on the language of the trust, you might also have to offer distributions to all the other beneficiaries. So the trust document can be written in a myriad of ways with lots of conditional language. So understanding what your role is only a part of it. Trying to unravel the messes that I mentioned earlier and come up with a solution that makes sense for the trust itself, for the beneficiaries and the contingent beneficiaries, it really becomes complex in some cases.
Yeah, unraveling is a good word. You're unraveling this trust in most cases to try to understand what the goals were of the individual who created the trust and then implement those goals in the way that they would have wanted that to happen. But a lot more challenges, even the time commitment springs to mind for me of having to address these things could be a real burden for somebody who's an individual trying to administer a trust. So I know there's some more of those that we want to talk about. And also payment for this. Do you get paid? Do you pay somebody else? How does that all work? So more to cover when we come back with Roger Coventry from Childers and Coventry.
You're listening to Aging in Arizona on 960 The Patriot, brought to you by Comfort Care Home Care. Comfort Care provides the care you need in the best place of all, your home.
Losing my head many years from now.
Welcome back to Aging in Arizona, brought to you by Comfort Care Home Care. Comfort Care can bring a caregiver to your home 2 hours a day or 24 hours a day to help with transportation, bathing, meal preparation, and more. All designed to help you stay in the best place of all, your home. Call Comfort Care at 602-438-1300 for more information. Again, that's 602-438-1300. I'm Presley Reeder. I'm here with my co-host, Mark Young, and we're talking with Roger Coventry from Childers and Coventry, a private fiduciary firm in Maricopa County. And even reading that advertisement for Comfort Care, Mark, makes me think of the responsibilities that come with administering a trust for someone. So that's what we're talking about. If you're put in the position where for a loved one, for a friend, whomever has decided you are a trustworthy individual to administer their trust after they pass away, you have a lot on your plate. And one of those things may be deciding about home care, like Comfort Care, and whether to use that for take the money and use that for some purpose, or I'm trying to think of other examples of managing that trust, how to spend the money, how to sell, whether or not to sell the house, when to sell the house, all these other things that may come up as a trust. It's a lot to handle.
Well, not only that, I think you can get a lot of people involved. If you got a large family and you're trying to make everybody feel like they're getting an even share, if that's what it is, chances are you're going to have somebody hating you.
And this can go on for years, right, Roger? I mean, sure. This isn't just a six-month or a one-year administration role. So before we went to the break, you were talking about this exact thing, the challenges that trustee, the person administering a trust, can face. So continue along that line here, and let's wrap that up.
Well, I've got a pretty big list of pitfalls and landmines, but I think that probably the number one issue or reason issues arise is communication. First of all, a trustee may not know exactly what their role is, and they have a hard time, once they do understand it, articulating that to the beneficiaries. Secondly, just articulating the provisions of the trust may be difficult. They might be able to understand it, but it might be hard for them to put that in lay terms. So we found that doing routine or periodic reports on our activities as trustee will really help alleviate some of the anxiety that the beneficiaries will have. You know, what can they expect? And a family member fiduciary can do the same thing. A letter, just an email or a letter to all the beneficiaries saying, I've been appointed trustee. Here's what I'm doing. I haven't made any distributions yet, but when I do, I'll let you know. Or, you know, any of the things that would be of interest to the beneficiary so that they know what's going on. I've had people call me and say, I just want to know what's going on. Well, I don't blame you.
Right. Sure. Communication's key. But that's a management responsibility. And you're talking about somebody who may, you know, most likely they've got their own family. They've got their own full-time job that they're working in. And so now on the weekends, they're spending time putting together an email that's maybe delicately worded to certain family members, you know, and it just seems like it's a big responsibility that people need to be ready to take on. They need to understand these roles. Certainly you've offered to counsel them and talk to them when they're asked to be a trustee, which I appreciate. Having been asked to be one myself, I look at a guy like you and a firm like yours, Childers and Coventry, and I think, why wouldn't I just have Roger, particularly with some of my family members having your Special Forces Army background, sit down with them and explain to them how this trust is going to work instead of me having to navigate all the family history and things of that nature? Talk about why wouldn't you have some professional do it?
Okay, I just want to make sure it's clear that I was never in the Special Forces.
Sorry, Special Operations. I know you were.
I was trained by some of the Special Operations Command units, but not serving. Just to make it clear, my veteran buddies would be highly offended if I made it implied that I was a Special Operator.
Fair enough.
But anyway, back to the question, and it's a good one. And even though we serve as trustee, we often serve as agent for trustees and other either professional trust companies, don't want to name names, but large trust companies will hire us to be their agent. And family member fiduciaries, non-professional fiduciaries can do the same thing. The agent is exactly that. They're the arm, eyes, ears of the trustee who has the authority. The trustee still makes all the decisions. We just carry out the tasks. We manage the assets. We prepare inventories. We do the communication if necessary. We essentially will do whatever the trustee wants us to do, which is within their domain as trustee. They still make the decisions.
So they're the owner. You're the director of operations, so to speak. They still make overarching decisions when there's any question that comes in. But you can also be fully responsible for the trust, right? And in some cases, you're called in to do that because of the dysfunction.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we can be named a special – some trusts will allow for what's called a special trustee, which is essentially an agent but with a different name. And we can do every function that's required of a trustee.
Mm. Well, let's make sure if folks have a question about that or interested in that, because you never know who's listening. They may be going through this right now. They can call you, Childers and Coventry, at 602-283-3332. Again, that's 602-283-3332. What about finances, payment? You know, your firm's going to get paid. If you're an individual who's administering a trust, do you get paid? Can you pay yourself? How does that work?
In most instances, a trust will have a provision for payment of services rendered by the trustee. I've seen a lot of trust documents that essentially say that the trustee is entitled to reasonable compensation. It's kind of a vague term. But fortunately, we have statutes in Arizona. We also have the Arizona Code of Judicial Administration, Section 3-303. That's an Arizona statewide fee guideline, which would also apply to trustees' fees. I happen to serve as an expert witness with respect to fees, trustee fees, other fiduciary fees, and that is a lot of times a bone of contention. Sometimes a trustee is told, yes, you can take fees. Well, they don't know how much. They don't know what's appropriate. And usually they'll err on the high side, and then we get called in to kind of sort out the mess. But with regard to that, if you plan to take fees and you're not a professional, I think the best thing to do is first take a look at the trust to see, does it have any specific direction in that regard? If not, then you have to determine, well, what is reasonable in the jurisdiction given the size of the estate, the complexity of the tasks that you're being expected to perform. But also tell people, tell the beneficiaries in your report, I'm the new trustee and I expect to be paid for my time. I'm going to document it in this way. I'm going to be paid X amount. And that way, if there's any problems, you can deal with it up front rather than waiting for a year or two down the road and then everybody's upset because you've taken what they believe to be too much in compensation.
Really getting ahead of the game, as always here, Mark, is so important. And communication as well, making sure that you're talking to folks about it. Now, do the and I'll get ahead of the game with my parents, mom and dad. I know you're tuned in, listening and learning here. Let's put something like that in there, because I think we all know I'm going to err on the high side if you leave it if you leave it open to me. So we need to make sure it's buttoned down how much I'm going to be compensated for administering the trust. So what about a firm, though? Go ahead.
I'd say definitely your siblings are going to think you're erring on the high
exactly.
side.
Exactly. So. What about a firm like yours? So you're overseen by the same statutes when
Absolutely.
It comes to cost?
Yeah, we have a fee schedule that's published on our website. We charge an hourly rate for our services. If we're not providing services, we don't charge. And we invoice very much like a law firm does. It's very specific, very detailed. And we try to show what the value of our services is in the description that's provided in the invoice. Mm.
Fantastic. Now, I mean, it really is there's a process for this, right, Mark? There's statutes established. There are fee schedules established. There's a way you can do this as well as possible. There's tools out there to help you make sure that this goes as smoothly as it possibly can. As I always say, people are involved. People aren't perfect. There's going to be issues, but you really can do this well. We've got a few minutes left in the show. I want to talk about incapacitation. I know that was one of the things you and I talked about before the show. How does incapacitation of either the trustee or the beneficiaries play into this this process?
Okay, well, I'll start with trustee. If a trustee becomes incapacitated, hopefully there's a provision in the trust that will speak to that issue. If not, it remains typically up to the beneficiary to bring that to the attention of a trust protector, perhaps, or unfortunately, maybe to the courts, because if a person's incapacitated, a lot of times they don't realize it or they won't admit it. And, you know, they would have to willingly submit to an evaluation in order to determine whether they truly are. So if they don't step down as a trustee willingly, you can end up in court.
Sure. I mean, I think I could give an example of this. I've seen examples, you know, elderly individual has maybe chosen a neighbor as their trustee. That neighbor is facing health challenges, maybe even dementia. They become the trustee, and it's really overwhelming for them, not something that they're capable of handling. We have a lot of folks who are living into their hundreds now, so that means their adult children are in their 80s. And not to say that it's always age that makes you incapacitated, but those are examples that spring to mind for me, where if you haven't reevaluated your trust and established a new trustee, you might run into that issue. Sorry, quickly go on to beneficiaries.
Yeah, if a beneficiary seems to be incapacitated and you're the trustee and you have concern that if you make a distribution to them that will not go toward their benefit. Someone else might take advantage of them, for example, or they just can't handle their finances. Then you have a duty to find a way, a surrogate or someone else who can act on their behalf. It could be a fiduciary that acts on their behalf. We've had cases where we've had to get a conservator involved for a person who's incapacitated because we knew we could not make a distribution to them without having this, you know, potential for a loss of their interest.
Again, part of the responsibility that could become yours if you're a trustee is to step in for one of the beneficiaries. And that may be your sibling. That may be a friend who is identified in the trust. Step in to become that health decision maker and the making financial decisions for a person who can no longer do that. It's really an expansive role here that we're talking about, and something that you have to be prepared for. So any last comments, Mark, on this role, or Roger? We've just got a minute or so.
I think my biggest takeaway today is, you know what, just because you're putting a trust together doesn't mean family and friends have to be part of that trustee. You can have an independent person that makes those tough decisions or does the legwork. If you have a complicated and you have to do distributions, just having somebody that's hired and will have the entire estate in mind versus putting yourself or somebody that may not have the time and experience to do it.
Yeah, I agree. A great takeaway. And also, you can get access to somebody like Roger ahead of time. Whether you're setting up your trust or whether you're going to be the trustee, you can reach out to Childers and Coventry and talk with somebody who does this every day and at least get some suggestions, whether or not you're going to engage with them as an agent, involve them in the administration. You can learn a ton, which is what we did today from Roger Coventry. Again, unfortunately, we're out of time, but Roger, thanks for coming back. We're going to have you on again and again. This topic is so extensive and helpful. So appreciate you putting together all this information, helping people avoid the pitfalls that come with setting up a trust or being in the role of administering a trust. And as Mark said, really can engage with you folks. One last time, Childers and Coventry, private fiduciary firm. You can reach them at 602-283-3332. Again, 602-283-3332. Roger and his team, I know, will be happy to speak with you about any questions that you have related to trust administration, fiduciary roles, and more. So for my co-host, Mark, this is Presley. I want to again thank our guest, Roger Coventry, our sponsor, Comfort Care Home Care, and thank you for tuning in. Listen in next Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 as we discuss the joys and some of the challenges of growing older here in our great state. Again, we'll see you next Sunday at 4 for Aging in Arizona, right here on Intelligent Talk 960, The Patriot.
Hey, Presley, have a great week.
Dude, Roger, thank you again.
Thank you, gentlemen.